From Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Eric Bauman, chairman of the Democratic Party of Los Angeles County, Mark Viviades, chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County, and Karen Sigelman, founder and president of Rage Against the Media. Our program tonight coming to you from the Westwood One Studios in beautiful downtown Culver City, less than a mile from the In-N-Out Burger, which you could probably say that just about with any location in the state of California. Our toll-free lines are open, and these are new toll-free lines for tonight only. Write them down, because you probably have the old ones memorized. It's 1-800-568-3191. 1-800-568-3191. Our email address remains the same, brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet us a comment, it's @Dumo. And again, we thank you all for joining us tonight. We have lots of things to discuss. And one of the things that I want to talk about is Ebola and the way in which everyone is responding to it. The Obama administration this afternoon said that they were not pleased with the actions of the governors of New York and New Jersey and Illinois and Florida, two Republicans, two Democrats, I might add, because the governors of those states have said that any returning medical worker who comes back into that state, into those states, is going to be quarantined for 21 days. I'd like to get everyone's reaction. Karen, I'm going to start with you. You're not wearing a partisan hat tonight. Do you believe that the administration, the federal administration, is reacting responsibly in this matter? Or do you think the four governors, again, two Republicans and two Democrats, are reacting with a political response, not necessarily a scientific sound response?
Right. The president the other day said, and I could not agree with this more, that a disease such as this, as contagious as it is, as virulent as it is, and dangerous and fatal and so on, requires local, state, and federal responses. And I thought that was exactly right. We need local responses, state responses, and federal responses. So far, so good. Then he went on to say we need to stop it at its source, which is West Africa. Also a good point. But he didn't mean any of it. He seemed to only mean we should be fighting it over there and not worry about when it comes here. I think when he said it should be up to the states, these four governors did exactly that. They saw the potential danger from what we saw in New York and Texas of letting people just fly in without any quarantine and other people get sick. I think they acted absolutely responsibly.
The head of the CDC and Eric Bauman, down ahead of the Democratic Party here in the Los Angeles County, I want to get your reaction. Andrew Fauci, Dr. Fauci, said that these are medical professionals. They know what to do. They can self-quarantine themselves. And then others went on to suggest that they're being treated almost like pariahs when they come back into their own country.
Well, first of all, Dr. Fauci is with the National Institutes of Health, not
yes,
with the
I'm
CDC.
Sorry, you're right, I'm sorry.
And as the RN here on the panel and okay. one who lived through the AIDS crisis and how it began, there's nothing worse than us creating the specter of fear that causes us to begin to look at each other like, you know, we're all vectors of disease. And that is the thing that I think we have to be so careful about avoiding. I think American people are smart enough to absorb information, good information about how to protect themselves, things that they should and shouldn't do, and common sense ways to protect themselves. But the great danger from any side is that we politicize this thing, right? What we have to do is get it contained so that people are not coming into the United States infected or infecting others around here, and that when somebody is exposed, that we protect others around them, especially those at highest risk. That said, we have to do that in a way that inspires calm amongst the public, not panic.
Mark Viviades, chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles, your response to the way the feds have responded and the way the four governors have responded.
I think the four governors have responded properly. I think the feds are behind the eight ball every step of the way. This is not a political issue. It's a safety issue. And because some medical people have been infected, even though they were using protocols, at least the correct protocols at the time, it shows that we may not know exactly still how people are getting infected. And because of that, we need to make sure that we take precautions, including a 21-day.
Would you disagree with the basic premise of Dr. Fauci, which is that medical professionals know how to self-quarantine themselves, and we should trust them, or if we don't, as one of the nurses wrote in an op-ed piece today, she felt like she's being captive and being, handled like a pariah.
I also work in the medical industry, and I don't think we can trust medical professionals to self-monitor, because if you speak with doctors, if you know doctors, they're the first ones to not be on correct diets, to not exercise correctly. They don't necessarily treat themselves the way they treat their patients. And because of that, I think we need to put extra
precautions.
There's one other point that's very important. There's also a difference between quarantining somebody, which means locking them in a place where they're not exposed to other people, and putting them on 21 days where they have to have their temperature taken twice a day and where their exposure is limited. That's a big difference. It's one thing to lock people up in a house like we used to do in the old days with measles and malaria, and it's another thing to have them on a monitoring protocol which enables us to detect whether or not they develop the signs and symptoms of the disease.
Well, the nurse in question, she basically has said, I want to get her name. Her name is Khaki Hickox. She has been quarantined, and she's quarantined in New Jersey, and yet she had no symptoms at all.
And she tested negative, by the way, I understand.
Right.
But the symptoms come on very quickly. She can be asymptomatic, and then all of a sudden, within 12 hours, she can have symptoms. And there's also a percentage of people that have no temperature that become symptomatic.
Should there be, at this particular moment in time, from a political standpoint, Eric, again, you have two Republicans, two Democrats, so I don't know whether there's not a partisan issue here. But the common denominator is you have governors, some of whom are involved in very tight re-election races, certainly in Florida and in Illinois. They want to err on the side of the public at this particular point. And is that not a common denominator of politics, that it may not be the wisest scientific thing to do, but it might be the best political thing to
do now? But the reverse of that is that Governor Cuomo and Governor Christie, and although Cuomo is up for re-election, he's 30 points ahead,
right,
and he's not in any jeopardy. They jointly held their press conference and announced their program together.
Right.
And I think they were really attempting to depoliticize it in the way that they did it.
Right.
I mean, the problem is, just like when AIDS began, there's still, even though we've known about Ebola for a long time, there's still so much we don't know. And if you remember in the early days of AIDS, we didn't know if the period till people seroconverted and became positive was 10 years long. And so we have things to learn, like how quickly, as Mark said, somebody can develop the disease who is asymptomatic.
I want to get a reaction from those listening coast to coast and border to border. Our special phone number tonight is 1-800-568-3191. 1-800-568-3191. Your reaction. Do you like the way the feds and the president and the administration is responding to the Ebola crisis? Or do you like the way the four state governors are responding, calling for the quarantine of medical workers returning from West Africa? I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Culver City, California.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
disagree with you.
Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our special phone number is 1-800-568-3191. 1-800-568-3191. And we continue our discussion of the way in which the federal government is responding and some changes in quarantine insofar as the returning, and we should mention these are all returning medical workers. That's what we're talking about. And some of them are believing that they're being treated as second-class citizens and that it is going to make some of them less likely to volunteer to go over to West Africa to fight the disease. Is that a concern that you have, Karen?
No, it's really not. And maybe it should be, but it's not. I think part of the package of going to a high-risk area is there's going to be other aspects to it that are maybe unpredictable. But if you are a healthcare professional and your goal is to treat other people and certainly first do no harm, to come back to the United States as a potential carrier, that first do no harm thing ought to play a pretty big role in your thinking. And to think otherwise, it seems to me, on the very selfish side.
And to think of the people who make that sacrifice to go into harm's way in a medical way, to go halfway around the world to fight a disease when they could be sitting home making a lot more money at a local hospital. Mm-hmm. It's a unique person that does that. And if you now impose upon them when they come back this 21-day period, it doesn't seem like an awful lot to ask. Eric, you've raised your eyebrows.
Well, first of all, I mean, look, I think we have to be sensible about how we do this. And yes, I agree with Karen. We have to protect we have to protect the American public, obviously. But the more difficult you make it, the less likely we're going to have people who are going to volunteer to go over there and do this in the first place. And we have to make sure that we don't reduce our ability to fight what's going on over there, which ultimately protects America, by making things that we get to the point of absurdity. Now, that said, again, I said there's a difference between 21 days of isolation and quarantine and 21 days of limited contact and monitoring, and I think that's an important difference. I am most concerned about us stirring the public up into a lather and fright, because that will ultimately result in bad actions being taken, people's civil liberties being infringed upon.
Do you believe, we talked about this last week, Mark, I want to get your reaction. Have we reached a point in our society that if you are educated and if you are knowledgeable about a subject, the masses will not agree with you because of an extended anti-intellectualism, anti-science, which is a growing political phenomenon in this country? It is used more by Republicans than Democrats, but not exclusively. And it is the fear of the unknown. And if an expert walks out there, the worst thing that you can say under their name is expert, or expert fill in the name of the government agency. Even though, frankly, and I can say this because I'm not running for office, even though, frankly, I can say it as a talk show host, even though the expert frequently knows a hell of a lot more than the people on the receiving end of their message.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think when experts talk down to the public and tell them, hey, we know better than you and this is why, that kind of rubs people the wrong way. But when they explain it logically and they make people understand why they're saying what they're saying, I think the public will agree. But lately there's been a—
So they have to educate, but not in an arrogant way.
Yes.
Because the reality is they do know more.
Yes, keep it simple.
Keep it simple. You agree with that?
And let's make sure they actually know, they actually do know, because that's another big deal, right?
Yes,
right, because sometimes it's empiric. This is by experience what we say, not based on having foundational knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's very true. But let's look at who the president brought in as the Ebola czar. Not an expert in Ebola whatsoever, not an expert in contagious diseases, not an expert in health, not an expert in anything except politics. And this does not inspire trust in anything the federal government is doing or the political
But at this moment in time, what is the president's biggest problem? Politics.
Oh, it's always politics,
except, of course.
He doesn't see Ebola as the problem. He sees the politics as the problem. And we down here are trying to live our lives and stay healthy and keep away from Ebola.
Actually, we have federal authorities who are theoretically the experts in this. And by the way, we would have a Surgeon General but for the action of the Republicans in the Senate. Sorry,
no,
Mark.
No, here we
no,
go.
No,
I don't
because,
think so.
But that,
here's another or the stupidity and arrogance of the administration to put someone forward that they knew damn well was never going to be.
So, but
I want to get back to the issue of Ron.
The partisanship of that appointment.
That's okay.
The issue of Ron. By the way, the president gets to appoint who he wants. This is where you're wrong. The president gets to appoint who he wants.
Yes.
Not who
the Senate
not,
has to approve it.
With the
that's
advice
true.
And consent of the Senate.
That said, but let's get back to the appointment of Ron Klain. Okay, this is a guy who's an expert in how the government works. Okay, what the president needs is somebody who can take what Dr. Fauci says and what the Centers for Disease Control say and what the medical experts say and figure out how do you make this work with the Congress and with the grand bureaucracy that is the federal government.
He doesn't have that kind of experience.
Oh, he certainly has
no,
that
No, he
experience.
Does not. He's a public affairs guy.
I would think that you would be saying this is exactly the guy because it reinforces the fact that the President of the United States needs to hire and make name as the Ebola czar someone who knows how to work, as Eric just said, who knows how to work make government work.
But I don't
because
think
the president may not know how to do that.
I think he's nothing but a bureaucrat, not a manager. And getting back to the
those are fighting words.
Getting back to the subject of credibility and people with titles, one of the problems that we've had now is that the president and his folks have said things about Ebola that haven't been true. For example, that it's never going to hit the shores of the United States, that people wearing, you know, medical professionals wearing good protective gear aren't going to get infected, and those haven't been shown to be the facts. And that's why the public is very skeptical right now.
Let's go to Barb in New Lenox, listening to us on WLS Radio. Go ahead, Barb. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, the doctor that's in New York right now was back for a week before he showed signs that he had Ebola. So the lady, I don't know if she a nurse or a doctor that just got back, is complaining. I wish she'd protect the rest of us. And one reason I'm a little leery of what the government is telling us, the guy who went with Nancy Snyderman and got Ebola over there, they never came out and said how he was infected. He didn't take care of patients over there. So who was he in contact with?
Well, that's the cameraman, the freelance cameraman.
The cameraman, right. Did somebody sneeze on him? Nancy Snyderman was suited up and went in the ward, but she didn't care for any patients. I'm assuming as a cameraman, he wasn't taking care of any patients, so I'm wondering how he got infected.
I don't think it ever said.
Right, and you're...
They didn't say, and when I called NBC, I've called several stations, and I can't get an answer.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, this quarantine of only healthcare workers, the president says it goes too far. It may well not go far enough.
Thanks for your call. Seth, listening to us in Indianapolis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hi. How are you? What's your question?
Pretty good. My question is more of a statement, but also a question at the same time. I'm 20 years old, and from what I've gathered from this Ebola, quote-unquote, crisis, I guess is what we're dealing with. I guess we don't want to call it a crisis yet. I'm wondering why the government isn't doing more. I feel like it's something we're leaving up to the hospitals too much, and I'm not saying they're failing because they're doing as much as they possibly can with something we don't truly understand yet. But I'm saying I think as the government, and again, coming from someone of my generation, I would have no problem with people coming in to our country from anywhere being screened. I don't know if that's too radical of an idea or a thought, but with my personal opinion, I like to think I'm very liberal. I'm a poli sci major, so I'm a very liberal person. But with something that we don't know, like this disease or this infection or whatever you want to call it, it's a very scary concept that something we don't know affects us until a week later, possibly even 2 weeks. And you have a 50-50 coin toss chance that you're going to either live or die.
Well, that's the reason why screening has been imposed on anybody who's flying in who has come from that region of the world. The biggest problem is that it's a circuitous route because nobody flies directly. Mm-hmm. So that means somebody can leave an African country and fly to Europe and then fly here from London or fly here from France or some other place. And right now we're screening people who come through, I think it's 5 or 6 international airports, mm-hmm. and the screening is the twice-a-day temperature taking. First of all, they're getting their temperatures taken in the airport upon arrival, and then 21 days.
There is one way, however, and that is if you're coming, again, from a third city, not from Sierra Leone, you can look at that person's passport or visa, correct. And you will know instantly. So you could literally say to that person, you go into that room right there, and we're going to put you on the next plane back.
And those people are being screened on arrival.
Right. But again, from a political standpoint, that may be the simple political thing to do. But again, the scientists who are discussing these matters with the president, they're saying that really doesn't make any – that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that? That sometimes the scientists may be telling the again, based on knowledge and based on tests and everything else, they're saying, Mr. President, this really isn't going to do a hill of beans. And the president looks at polls and says, well, I better go the other way. Although in this particular case, he's standing fast.
I agree, Bruce, because, I mean, if someone has been infected, they may not show any symptoms for days. And if you just take their temperature as they arrive in the airport and then they're let loose, that's not going to do anything.
Well, Chris Christie, by the way, said that he did what he did because he was protecting the public health in his state. And then he added that the CDC will come around to our point of view. That's Chris Christie. When we come back, and we will continue to take conversations and calls at this at 1-800-568-3191, I want to ask a political question. Does this issue thrust Chris Christie into a different role? Will he be perceived differently by people all around the United States? Back shortly from Culver City.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Duhamel back from Culver City. Thanks very much for joining us. We are in the beautiful studios of Westwood One, very close to beautiful downtown Culver City. And again, we have a different 800 number tonight. It's 1-800-568-3191. And this is the part of the broadcast where we let each of our guests take about 10 seconds and briefly introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you here this evening. And we'll start with Karen Sigelman.
Hi, I am a Californian. I run an organization called Rage Against the Media that fights media not like yours, but the mainstream media that is in complicity with a leftist agenda. And I've been a teacher, a scientist, and now I'm an activist.
By the way, I just want to make one point. Today on the ABC This Week show with Martha Raddatz, who mm-hmm. I really, really like, she did something very odd happened on the show. They came back from a commercial break. They played a clip of Monica Lewinsky saying, I just fell in love with my boss. They did not superimpose who she was. They came out of the break. They made no reference to her at that particular point. They discussed the subject later in the element. But I'm just saying, you know, for anyone under the age of 35, they don't even know who she was. And yet I thought that was a very odd use of that clip without any attribution, which normally doesn't happen. Mark Viviati, tell everybody who you are.
I'm chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County. I've been a Republican activist for years in Massachusetts and in California. Also,
did you work with Mitt Romney?
Pardon me?
Did you work with Mitt Romney?
I did when he ran actually the first time for Senate in the early 90s
against Teddy Kennedy.
Yes, yes. And I'm also very involved with the Hollywood Republican movement.
And professionally, you are what?
I'm an actor. I also am in the medical industry in electronic medical records.
Eric Bauman, who is the chairman of the Democratic Party of Los Angeles, but I'll let you elaborate on that.
Can I just say one thing? I thought Mark had it right. I knew the Republicans were a little confused. If you're an actor, you're supposed to be in a restaurant, not in the medical industry. Listen, Mark and I are friends, and I consider him a fair ally, even if we disagree on the issues. And I am the leftist. I think that Karen probably is raging against my agenda, although my agenda is pretty pragmatic. I am the chair of the LA County Democratic Party, have been for 14 years. I'm the vice chair of the California Democratic Party. And I have worked very hard to make California the sort of big blue beacon of hope, as we like to call it, where people can look at from across the country and see that progressive leadership does succeed.
A question to each of our political leaders tonight. Because California has become such a blue state, but really for both parties it is a green state because it's where everybody comes to raise money. The Republicans who live here, who they know, I mean, even if you tell me they're going to go to bed tonight knowing there probably isn't going to be any Republican elected statewide, okay? You may disagree with that. But they still support the party. They know this party is going to be blue in 2016. How do you keep them motivated to support a party that has not had great success in the recent decades? Mark.
Well, actually, we know it's been very difficult lately, but just given, and of course my friend Eric will disagree with me on this, but given the economy, given the tax situation, the fact that businesses are leaving here every day, going to California and Utah and Nevada, and people are realizing this, and because of that, they are looking to the Republican Party for some kind of salvation from that.
So they're doing it, even though there hasn't been success at the ballot box, with the exception of some, you know, the congressional delegation.
Well, there is more and more, and we expect next week that we're going to have some more success, and that will build on.
Now, Eric, to you, you represent a lot of Democrats, a lot of liberal Democrats, a lot of the Hollywood left. We see them, you know, back in the Midwest, they're writing checks, they're having big parties for the president when he flies in for his soirees. Do the California Democrats feel that they are taken for granted? Because the reality is they don't have to spend a lot of money here, but they have to raise a lot of money here.
You know what?
Do they get ticked off at that? Do they get respect for it?
First of all, this is a great place to be a Democrat. Let's start off with that. And
it's easy for you to say that now. You didn't say it 30 years ago.
No, but you see, this is to Mark's point. You know, the Democratic Party had its version of where the Republican Party in California is at today. 35 years ago,
Reagan era.
And part of it is, for Republicans, they've got to figure out how they become a party of more than just primarily white conservative men with an anti-immigrant agenda. And there, if you look at some of the nominees of the Republican Party in this election cycle, you can see there's a change towards it. I think it's a long-term project, and ultimately for the best of our governance of our state and our country. It's best if both parties can win. I have to tell you, my job is to make sure that every day that I win and not Mark. But seriously, I applaud the efforts that the LAGOP and Senator Brulte, who's running the California Republican Party, are trying to do to broaden its outreach, because I think it's better for our state.
I'm going to ask this question to you, Karen. Is there any Republican on the national scene who you think could make California a competitive state in 2016 against Hillary Clinton? Let's assume
any Republican on the national scene who could beat
Hillary Clinton in California, Clinton, or come close, make it
that's
a viable
great
race.
That's a great question.
Thank you. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
You know, I do think we are seeing here in California more than anywhere. Well, not anywhere. Detroit too. The results of a leftist agenda, and we are going just getting worse and worse, and companies are leaving to Texas. So I would say, I think looking at what Texas is doing, it is quite likely that Rick Perry, as the beacon from Texas, could beat, I think Hillary Clinton's unbelievably weak. And as I've said, I don't think she'll run. But I think it could be Rick Perry in the state of California who could give her the run for her money.
Now you know why California is controlled by Democrats.
When you were here in January, mm-hmm. and when we were assessing the very broad field of Republicans, you made a very strong case for Rick Perry,
yes.
as being the one who probably could have some appeal to maybe four or five wings.
That's correct.
Of the maybe the only one that could have an appeal
right.
to all four or five wings. I thought that was a very valid point, and certainly there was there's been a comeback by Rick Perry since you said that.
On the immigration issue right. and the corporate issue.
Speaking of Rick Perry, let's go to Austin, Texas. Alex is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Oh, hey. What's going on, guys?
Very good. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing all right.
What's your question?
Well, I was going on the Ebola thing, whether or not that the quarantines should be good or not. And,
yes.
you know, generally speaking, it's better to be safe than sorry. You know, like I was a medic in the Army, and I saw an infection go just race across the entire platoon of soldiers. And these guys are people that obviously know how to wash their hands and whatnot. And, I mean, these are really high, dense, populated urban areas, and we don't want something going around that's going to, you know, cause a lot of issues and a lot of death.
So you would be in the camp that would say don't allow anyone in from West African nations?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go to Connecticut. Mary in Connecticut, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, it is Maryland. And listen, I think that this is a window of opportunity for the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the American Medical Association, and other health care provider organizations to give the public one of the best possible methods of controlling the spread of infectious disease, and that is hand washing. For all of the people that we hear talking that political and it's not political, I don't know if that's even the issue. The issue is that we spread disease, and it spreads in various forms. And one thing we all can do is wash our hands frequently.
We can wash our hands. We can cover our mouth when we cough
okay.
or sneeze.
Right.
I mean, these are basic. We have a nurse on the panel here tonight.
But let's be clear:
when we talk
about washing your hands, we're not talking about running them under the water.
Right.
We're talking about 30 seconds
yeah.
with friction and hot water and soap. And be careful about how much you use in the chemical disinfectants, because quite frankly, people are starting to develop resistance on skin bacteria from using that so much. So just do the old-fashioned way with soap and water for 30 seconds, some hot water, and rub.
Let's go to Carter in Washington, D.C. Go ahead. You're on Beyond the Beltway. Thanks for joining us.
Yes. Listen, my first of all, let me just say my heart goes out to nurse.
Go ahead. Are you there? Whoops. We lost him. Let's go to Brian in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on listening to us on WLS. Are you there? Line three? Not there either. I want to button this subject up. Do you expect more Republican and Democratic governors to jump on the bandwagon with the four governors that have decided to quarantine those coming to their states? Is that a growing trend?
Yeah, I actually do, Bruce. Until we have more facts, until we have an inoculation, until we have a cure, until we know for sure how it's contracted, we're going to err on the side of caution. Once we have a cure, once we have an inoculation, it's not going to be as much of a big deal. But for now, we need to play it safe.
And Dr. Fauci said that he didn't think this was a very good idea. But again, from a political standpoint, again, we're 2 weeks from an election day. Eric, will Democratic governors involved in close reelection races or even not close reelection races, will they join sort of the public mood on this?
I think that governors are going to try to protect people of their state, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, whether they're running or they're not. That's their job. That's what they have to do, is protect people first.
Okay, and that means I think the answer to the question is probably yes. There'll probably be more before Election Day. 1-800-568-3191. We've been talking about protecting the public from Ebola. When we come back, we're going to be talking about protecting the public from terrorism, domestic and otherwise. Back shortly. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Culver City, California.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back from Culver City. Thanks very much for being with us from coast to coast and border to border. Brian was standing by. We missed him the last time. We're going to try him a second time. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening, everybody. I think it was you, Bruce, that earlier was stating that Americans don't believe in experts anymore or mistrust the experts.
Right.
And, you know, I like to put forth the evidence that we should have a healthy skepticism. I remember the experts that said we should deregulate the banks. Remember the experts that said that we should invade Iraq, and how wrong all those experts were, and how many lives we wasted. And
I don't know if I'd agree with you on that, Brian.
Pardon me?
I don't know if I'd agree with you on that, Brian.
Nor would I.
So it's all right, Brian. I agree with you.
Right.
You can tell which one I am.
But I think, but I think your point is well taken. Is that there may have been experts in the past that have given us bad information. I think you would acknowledge there's some experts in the past that have given us good information. And
well,
most of the information that we've accepted that has turned out to be good, it isn't news because everyone accepts it and there has not been any negative response to it. I'm concerned about the growing anti-intellectualism.
Let me also say that many of these so-called experts have ulterior motives that enter into their calculus that they don't share with everybody. And also I would like to point out the worst entity in this whole episode of Ebola has been American cable television, cable TV news, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, have all been terrible because they want to whip up hysteria and drive up their ratings. That's the game they're playing.
Okay.
Just like politicians are playing a game because they want to win the next election. That's their number one criteria.
Let's let our person from Rage Against the Media. You may be a convert to her efforts.
It's generally the case, as you so accurately say, that networks, that news stations are very focused on whipping up frenzies because it engages people and it gets more people to watch. On the other hand, as regards Ebola, I've seen surprisingly mild responses from most of the media to it, in large part because our administration has been doing what it can to tamp this down. And to be honest, I'm seeing not nearly as much of a frenzy as people talk about. We just had a guy on a subway for a couple of hours before he wound up in the hospital with positive testing for Ebola. If we were, in fact, whipped into a frenzy, I think we would see that frenzy in New York being played out right now. So I'm not that sure that we can put
some extent. We're doing this show nationally. But again, as I understand it, that is prevalent in some media speculation that's going on in New York. I mean, one person had gone to a bowling alley, and there was a person quoted in the New York Times saying, "Well, I'm not going to go bowling for several
weeks."
And
there will always be that.
But the problem isn't the problem isn't the guy who won't go bowling. The problem is the guy in the bowling alley who says, who hears, "Oh, that guy over there's got Ebola," and then they go over and beat him up. Okay, that's what the problem is. That's where the hysteria comes in, and that's what we've got to avoid. Wait a second. And I want to tell you that when I drove to work the other morning and I heard on the local L.A. news radio station Ebola Watch at 8:57, okay, we're just like usually here in L.A., we're on Storm Watch.
Right.
Now we're on Ebola Watch.
Right. Michael in Tennessee listening to us this evening. Nice to have you with us. Are you there, Michael? Go ahead. Going once, going twice.
Sold.
How about Bob in Indiana? Are you there?
Hello?
Yes, Bob.
I just have a brief comment. I've been to Sierra Leone 12 times since after the Blood Diamond Civil War. We work at a hospital. We've been following Ebola probably since December when it first came out. The initial response was, well, there's, 7 million people in Sierra Leone, and there's only 600 cases. Kind of the same thing I've heard from the government in this case. Now, the thing that I wanted to throw out to consider is, I have a friend from Sierra Leone who somehow secured a visa to come to the United States. And he's supposed to come in November. And he's wondering, he could come to our house. He's a friend of mine. But the concept is, what am I supposed to do with this? I live in the middle of America. I've got a guy who works in a hospital environment in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and he wants to come to America. Do I have him in my house? Do I expose my community to those issues? That's the question I have.
My answer would be that he not come to your house.
Where does
it may be harsh at this moment in time, but I want to get – that's my answer. Eric, what would your answer be?
this is just not an easy question
not easy
to answer.
And I gotta tell you,
as rabbinic as I feel that I am, I'm not making dispensations here. I don't know how you tell somebody not to have your friend in your house, and the simplest thing is have him get tested before he comes over.
Well,
he's a medical professional. He's in the hospital.
Let's let the other two respond. Mark?
I mean, I think if he's working in a hospital with possible Ebola patients, he should, if he wants to come here, he needs to come here and be quarantined for 21 days if he really wants to come.
Yeah, or put it off for a while. It's a pretty hot topic right now. Surely he can wait.
Again, I hate to give you the bad news, but that was my advice. You asked for it. I gave it to you. Listen, thank you very much for your call. A reminder, everyone listening, in case you've just tuned in, we've got a new 800 number tonight. It appears to be working. We're getting calls from around the country. It's 1-800-568-3191. 1-800-568-3191. I'm Bruce Dumont. Tonight, we're live from Culver City, California. We'll continue with our guests. And in the next hour, we're going to be talking about the fear of terrorism. Whether you have a hatchet, whether you have a gun, or whether you have explosives. That's the discussion in hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. We will continue after network news live from Culver City in California. From Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Eric Bauman, the chairman of the Democratic Party of Los Angeles County and also the vice chairman of the California Democratic Party. Mark Viviades, the chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County and also with Hollywood Republicans, and also Karen Sigelman, and she is the founder and president of Rage Against the Media. Tonight we're coming to you from the Westwood One Studios in downtown Culver City. And again, we have a new 800 number this evening, 1-800-568-3191. 1-800-568-3191 if you'd like to email us a comment. Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you want to tweet us a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, this broadcast, if you miss it any week, you can go to beyondthebeltway.com and hear the audio and or video portion. Again, when we are away from Chicago, we don't have a video portion of the show. However, if you're listening in Chicago, there will be a video version tonight at midnight on WYCC television, channel 20. In the last hour, we were talking about Ebola and the U.S. response to it, and how the federal government and now some state four governors are responding to it a little bit differently when it comes to quarantine medical workers and dealing with it. It's a position that the president is not real happy about. But the other big story is we had this assault by a Muslim in Canada. There was one soldier that was killed. The perpetrator in this case was also shot and killed. And part of that story is that he was a Muslim. And we also had a story this week out of New York is that a Muslim also with a hatchet, an 18.5-inch hatchet, attacked four New York City policemen. One was killed. The other was injured. And they were rookies. And he also is a Muslim. And the response from the police department is the initial impression is that he's just an angry man who's ranting against the American government and American oppression of foreign people, end of quote. And I want to get reaction primarily from you, Karen. I want to start because your group is Rage Against the Media. How should the media deal with the religious beliefs of anyone that commits a crime?
I think we need to recognize, first of all, that Islam is far more than a religion. It is an all-encompassing political and religious, but political ideology. And I think to first order what our media has got to do is report that Islam is not just a religion. We should have been educated over the years as to the facts about what Islam is.
Let me just interject for a moment about facts, because I just made an error in my comments here. The police officers were not killed. The person that was killed was the person that tried to kill the police officers. I want to be clear about that.
Right.
We have one officer in stable condition, one, again, in a little better condition. A woman was also shot by an errant police bullet. And she appears to be in stable condition as well. But again, the person who attacked them with a hatchet was shot and killed by the officers.
Right. And also, I do believe that subsequent to the quote that you just read, the police in New York have acknowledged that this man, you said he was a Muslim, they categorized it as a terrorist attack. So we have two.
But now they're pulling it back. They're just an angry guy.
Just an angry guy. Subsequent to them calling him a terrorist. Interesting.
But, you know, I was going to say the fact that he's a Muslim isn't as important as the fact that he's doing this in the name of Islam.
That is correct.
Because if someone's committing a crime, if someone's robbing a store and they happen to be Jewish or Christian or Muslim, it's irrelevant. But if they're doing the crime in the name of their religion, that's what makes it relevant.
Right.
Eric, I want to get Eric's response.
You know, I have this natural uncomfortableness about making it about a person's religion. There's obviously a recurrent problem here. We see this over and over again. We see that there's a vast network of terrorists who are Muslim. The vast majority of people that I know that are Muslim are not different than any one of us sitting around this table. And this is where we get into the problem. And I think Karen's point that there is a whole political system is probably really a good point. But it makes me extraordinarily squeamish because I don't want to see everyday Muslim Americans become targeted when they're no different than any one of us. And this is a very tough line for us to have.
Absolutely.
The bottom line is there are crazy people who want to kill other people, want to destroy America, want to destroy freedom, want to destroy – and those people are harmful to all of us, and we have to protect ourselves.
Is this – let me just point, because it gets back to the media coverage of it. Whether or not the media decides to identify someone as a Muslim, a radical Islamist, I mean, there's a variety of ways they can say it, or they don't even mention the religion at all. The first stories of the New York Times didn't mention any religion connection at all. But it can play at this particular time, especially when the American people are sensitive to this. It can feed a narrative. It can feed a fear that people have, because it paints a bleak, a dark picture of some people who are coming from the same religious, at least, foundation.
Absolutely right. And there is most certainly that risk, which is, again, why if we were, over the years, generally speaking, informed as to Islam, these things wouldn't rise up only when they become a terrorist issue. And in addition, as Mark absolutely said, when they commit these acts, because in order to fulfill some Islamic agenda or in the name of Allah or because of some belief, that's not tangential to the crime that they commit or the act that they commit. That is the focus. It's the purpose of it. Their purpose has to do with that religion, that creed, that ideology. It would be what we always talk about. Why did this person do it? If that's the reason they did it, we should know about that. And we also need to understand how these acts fit into a much bigger picture. Beheadings, hatchet attacks, shootings. This is all part of a much bigger picture that when we only look at these things as individual circumstances or crimes, we're missing the entirely bigger picture, and we're less able to fight against it.
But when you say that – or when the New York City Police Department initially said that this was not a terrorist attack, okay? Let's say – okay, to me, a terrorist attack is directed by some – of one of the major terrorist organizations of the world. That's a terrorist attack. It is no less serious if the person is an individual.
Correct.
Acting alone under no direction other than maybe a deranged mind or his interpretation of a religious belief, and he goes out and does something that is violent, because the results are the same, are they not, Eric?
I agree. No, listen, I agree. And I think, by the way, I think from everything that I know, most Judeo-Christian, most Abrahamic interpretations of religion do not call for these kinds of terrible things, and that often these interpretations are twisted. That said, we have to take people where they are, and some people are just so deranged that their interpretation of the world around them doesn't match anything we see.
How do we protect ourselves? That's the question when we come back. 1-800-568-3191. Do you have a suggestion how we protect ourselves from potential radical religious people? Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont, thanks very much for being with us tonight. I want to continue our discussion about not only the hatchet attack in New York City, but also the way in which we cover stories. And when is it important to identify the religion of someone? Because years ago, at least in news, they stopped identifying the race involved in a crime. Whereas if you watch television, they will frequently show you the face of the person. In many cases, it is an African-American. I say that coming from Chicago, where I watch my news, and it is more frequently than not, it is an African-American. They never identify them as an African-American. And I'm wondering at this particular time, because we talked about earlier, you know, just the suspicion. How suspicious should we be of someone who looks like a Muslim, Mark?
You know, we should not be suspicious of someone just because they look like a Muslim or just because they are a Muslim. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we don't not name the religion of someone in the name of political correctness if their motivation and their reason for doing the crime was the religion. If they're doing something in the name of Islam, it needs to be told that it was done in the name of Islam. And the Muslim people, again, the good Muslim people of the in the United States, of which most are, need to speak out against those people that are committing these crimes.
Who do they speak out to?
Right. Well, absolutely. Who do they speak out to? First, let me just say that's so exactly true. We should not be discriminating against people for their religion or whatever. But it would be refreshing to hear from Muslims who do not believe in violence, that they stand firm against this. Who do they speak out to? They can speak to reporters. They can speak to their politicians. They can speak to anybody on the news. They can call in to you right now. They can go to their imams. They can form their own alternate mosques that are more peace-loving. This is a country where we have freedom to exercise whatever religion you like. Why aren't Muslims forming their own more pacifist, anti-terrorist mosques?
Does that include also a situation where, and again, recently we had a radical who was thrown out of a mosque because he was too radical, and yet there was no one in that mosque who reported that to authorities. Is that something that should be happening? Or, Eric, are you concerned that we will then, given being a civil libertarian, are you worried that that's creating this aura of fear that you described so brilliantly in hour number one when we're talking about Ebola?
Look, what I worry about is what we saw after 9/11 here in Los Angeles, where Sikhs who were working in 7-Elevens around Los Angeles were beaten because after all of the hyped up talk about, you know, the 9/11 attacks being Muslims,
yeah,
people went in, thought they were Muslims, and beat them. And there's a very fine line about what you do to keep people safe and keep people protected. You know, you mentioned that, well, we don't mention race anymore, but, you know, on TV they show them in Chicago and they're African-American or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's relevant whether they're African-American, Latino, white, Asian. Whoever commits a crime commits a crime. But there is this bigger issue that we were talking about earlier, and I think whatever we do, we have to make sure that regular, everyday Muslim Americans are safe and protected and don't become victimized because they're Muslim. And as to whether or not somebody is thrown out of a mosque because they're, quote, too radical, whatever that means, whether that's political radicalism or religious radicalism, I don't know how you tell a mosque or a church or a synagogue that they have to inform on their members. And this is a problem in other religions, too, because this comes up all the time. And I don't really know the answer to this. I'm most worried about keeping people safe.
Speaking about keeping people safe, this is another story that was played heavily here in California, but probably not didn't get a lot of play around the country. And that is two sheriff's deputies were killed this past week. This comes out of Sacramento, California.
It was yesterday.
And two officers were killed. One was seriously injured. And the person involved was someone who had been deported to Mexico twice. Karen, how has this story, it's too early to know how this story is playing, but it plays into a scenario that a lot of people, certainly right of center, believe in this state and around the country.
Absolutely. And this is yet another story that the media has failed to report on, not this specific one, but the issue of what happens when you open your borders. And it is astonishing the dangers that are flooding across our border, from various diseases to gang members to criminals of all kinds.
Let me just interject for a moment. This isn't so much about opening your borders.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone that the person involved in this was deported twice.
And has come
so
back twice.
So he was captured twice.
Right.
So the government did the right thing. They deported him. And he kept coming back. And now he shot three police officers fatally.
Because our borders are so open.
Exactly.
It was very easy for him to come back.
Right.
That was the problem. And, you know, the media,
exactly,
as Karen
right.
mentioned, has really underplayed this story. I, even today, didn't know the name of the individual that committed this crime because they haven't been discussing it much in most of the media.
Marcello Marquez.
Yeah, this is the first time I heard that. And I think the media really is underestimating the goodness of the Americans, thinking if they tell them that a person is this religion or from this country legally, that they're going to automatically go out and attack everybody of the same.
But let's be clear. The vast majority of people who attack police officers are not undocumented people who cross the border illegally. And this guy was a criminal who was deported not
that's
once,
what I'm saying.
But
give
twice.
The American
so,
people
so
credit and let them know that.
Let's separate this from the normal immigration issues. And by the way, America's borders have, in a sense, always been porous. When my relatives came from Eastern Europe, as when the Italians came and when the Irish came, I mean, they brought with them all of the same kinds of things, the same kinds of diseases. Of the time, obviously. So this is an ongoing problem that
we've
had.
But they went through Ellis Island.
They went through Ellis Island where they were deloused and they had their names changed.
Exactly, right.
but so this is not a new problem. I always worry about a scapegoat. And by the way, if there ever was a reason to make sure that we give driver's licenses to undocumented people who live here, it's getting those fingerprints so that we can actually find people. The most important part of having driver's licenses for people who are here who are theoretically undocumented is we get the ability to find them, to know who they are, and to find them if they commit a crime.
You don't need a driver's license for that.
You just scared a lot of people.
Yeah, if someone is arrested once, their fingerprints are in the system.
Right.
So if they commit a crime once, their fingerprints are in the system regardless of whether they have a license or not.
Right, but that's true. But however, if a crime is committed and fingerprints are found, not having them in the database means you can't find them.
No, that's what I'm saying. They're in the database once they've committed one crime.
Right. But we want it before they've committed a crime so that we can find them if they do.
To what extent in California, and again, you all live here, so you have to tell me, to what extent in California is the vigilance of some of the electorate of the state and some of the population of the state that they are looking over their shoulders and they are reporting their neighbors who they believe are illegal immigrants?
That never happens.
It never happens.
Never happens.
Why does that never happen?
Because people, they just don't do that. I mean, they're not looking around saying who's illegal, who's not. And if they find someone who they think is illegal, they're going to deport them. I mean, half the people in the California would be reporting their gardeners.
Nobody would have a gardener.
Right.
There would be no bus,
no,
no busers, no, and no dishwashers.
No daycare,
and
does, no child
does,
care.
So the reality is that the illegal immigrants or the perceived illegal immigrants are such an integral part of the running and the operations of this state that no one really in this state takes this subject seriously.
I don't think that's why they're not reported. I think it's because people are good. They're not going to think someone is illegal and treat them badly. People in California are good people, and they treat everybody nicely, whether they think they're illegal or not.
Other than Assemblymember Donnelly.
And people who I know who are aware of various people who work, their gardeners, their daycare, their whatever, they do what they can to help them attain citizenship. I'm not seeing people turning anybody in.
So the people of California, the people of California are doing what Democrat politicians and Republican politicians have done for a long time. 49 other states may say, let's get tough on illegal immigrants. But what I'm hearing you say is that the people that live in California who take advantage of the skills and the work habit and ethic of many of these illegal immigrants, as well as politicians, everyone turns looks the other way.
That's not what I meant. I don't mean they're looking the other way because they're taking advantage of their skills and their work. What I'm saying is that people think this is a larger problem, but when it comes to individuals, one-on-one, they're not going to say, I'm going to turn that guy in because he's illegal. They want to do something about the larger issue, but when people are here, they treat them like humans and like good people.
What is the larger issue that they want to – what they want to avoid is they want to avoid a situation like we just described in Sacramento. They want to avoid someone who is an illegal immigrant who comes to this country who commits a crime. In this particular case, he committed a crime, two crimes, and he was sent back.
But how is that any different than anybody else committing a crime? I mean, look, I think we have to have a rational –
because of the politics.
And by the way, let's be clear. People who are here who are undocumented or who, as you call them, are illegal don't only come from Mexico and Guatemala. They also come from
Canada.
All across the world. And they come here on visas to go to school, and then visas expire. There's all kinds of reasons why people are here, as some would say,
illegally.
Let's
be realistic. I mean, we're a state right next to Mexico.
Yes,
so
of course.
Realistically, most of the illegal immigrants here are Mexican.
But there are 12 million people in America who are not here legally.
I think it's more, and
that may be so. And we need to fix this problem because they've become an integral part of our society.
All I'm saying is Republicans, Democrats, and maybe – the vast majority of the population in California really don't want this issue addressed because it's too convenient for them. Okay, we have to be back. Back shortly. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont, now in our 34th year on the air. Nice to have you with us. We will be back shortly.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for being with us. Our guest this evening, Eric Baumann, is here. He is chairman of the Democratic Party of Los Angeles and also vice chairman of the California Democratic Party. Mark Viviades is here. He is chairman of the Republican Party of Los Angeles County. And Karen Sigelman, she is founder and president of Rage Against the Media. Now, Rage Against the Media, now, do you have some big palatial office and this pays you a huge six-figure salary? And
she's raging.
Or do you have a real job?
No.
And what is your real job?
At the moment, I do not have a real job, but I'm...
You're amongst the unemployed.
I am amongst the California.
California
unemployed. In the past, I've been a professor of mathematics. I taught middle school, and for 18 years, I was a scientist. I'm doing underwater acoustics, fighting against the Soviet Navy.
Quick question to follow up. As a scientist, do you agree with my assessment earlier in the broadcast that anti-intellectualism and questioning of science is a growing trend
absolutely
in this country?
Absolutely.
And how do you feel about it?
And actually, it's been turned on its head because anti-science has been called science now. The science is settled about global warming, which is completely preposterous. So not only are lies being propagated in the name of science, but that undermines the true science. So, yes, experts are quote experts such as Al Gore are being held up as iconic Nobel Prize Oscar winning experts, and true experts are being looked askance. So is there an anti-intellectualism and an elevating of those who know nothing? Yes, there is.
I want to switch gears to politics. Mark, I want to ask you a question. Today on this week's show, Jonathan Carl did an interview with George P. Bush, who is running for Texas Land Commissioner. And he is the son of Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida, who has had flirtations with running for president. And he sort of hinted, the son sort of hinted that maybe dad was ready to run and that maybe the family would be behind him. Would you like to see Jeb Bush in the field for 2016?
Would I like to? I would like to see whichever Republican can beat the Democrat. People have been talking about Jeb Bush getting into this race for a long time. He's never denied it. There's no doubt he's interested in it. And he is among the top three or four polling-wise who could possibly run. I don't think he will be the guy that runs. I think there's too much anti-Bushism within the Republican Party at this point. So I really don't think he's going to be the guy.
Karen, what do you think?
No, I don't think so at all either.
I don't think he will run?
No, I think he'll throw his name in the hat as we know this, but he won't make it very far. We're tired of the Bush family. I can't see it getting very far. It's a known name, and that's about it.
Eric, doesn't that sound like a radio commercial in case he runs?
I just want to tell you right now, I'm ready for Hillary, okay? And while I support this president, I am out ready, working already for Hillary, so.
So Hillary will – you said earlier that you think Hillary is a weak candidate. I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because, as I said at the beginning, California is a blue state. If Hillary Clinton is the Democratic candidate, I can't think of a Republican candidate that would make this state contestable, with one exception, and I want to get everybody's reaction to it. I don't think any of the establishment – I disagree with you. I don't think that Rick Perry would make it competitive. I don't think that Jeb Bush would make it competitive. The only person who I think conceivably – and I don't think Chris Christie would make it competitive, even though he goes to In-N-Out Burger. I do believe that the person who has the potential to do it would be Rand Paul.
You know,
only because Rand Paul expands the base and is reaching out and saying things to different constituencies that are not traditionally Republican.
I want to just say there's criticism just this week about the fact that Rand Paul is modulating and moderating and changing his long-held views. Rand Paul certainly has excited many people, and especially young people, but the reality is he's not going to carry California. His positions on too many issues are too far away.
You cringed when I mentioned Rand Paul, Mr. Republican.
You weren't supposed to see that, Bruce.
I was interpreting for our radio audience.
Basically, there are a lot of the Ron Paul followers who are moving over to the Rand Paul camp, and they're hoping he has pretty much the same views, and he does, very similar to his father. He's very wishy-washy on one of the most important issues of the day right now, and that's national security and what's going on overseas and in the Middle East. I don't think he'll be the guy. I think there are others that would be stronger against Hillary.
Who would be strong? Who would be in a better position to expand the base so it isn't just the core coming out? Mm-hmm. Because it seems to me that with Rand Paul, whether it's his position on drugs, whether it is positions of actually going into the African American communities and talking, whether it is going to Missouri, whether it is talking about the ability of ex-offenders to be able to vote, the disparities between sentencing. I mean, these are things that Republicans don't ever talk about, at least in a presidential election.
That's why he won't win the primary, by the way.
We need, for a presidential candidate and hopefully president, a strong leader, someone who's speaking out against what's going on overseas and is standing up for the United States and saying United States first, someone who believes in the Constitution, someone who wants to get the economy back in check and back in good shape so that we have, better jobs for the working people of this
country.
Did
Chris Christie this week by moving and appearing with Governor Cuomo of New York and by basically calling out the federal government and saying, I'm going to have a quarantine in my state, two Republicans, two Democrats, does that get him back in the race? Because he's the guy. To me, it's similar to Ronald Reagan stealing the microphone in that debate back in New Hampshire a long, long time ago. It showed him as a leader. And when he says, I'm here to protect the public health of this state, That sounds different, I think, to a lot of people than the way the president has responded to Ebola.
This is
He sounds like a leader, even though he may be totally wet and he may be it may be just pure political pandering. But it seems to me that that's a that he may have seized a moment here.
I think this puts him back in the fray. The quote Bridgegate. After all these months, there's been no evidence that he was involved in any way. And this incident here with Ebola is thrust him back into the spotlight. I'm not saying he's going to be the guy. He's got some other problems. But again, his demeanor is the kind that the Republicans have been looking for. Someone who's a strong leader and a straight talking guy.
Eric, what do you think?
Look, I think it's wishful thinking. If he was running for president on the East Coast, he might have a chance. But they don't like him in the South, and they don't like him in the Midwest, and that's where Republicans have their strength.
What about on this issue?
But he would be
seen as the governor that's standing up to the federal government, standing up to Barack Obama, when many Republicans don't like that he even walked the beach with Barack Obama.
And
that's probably the biggest albatross around his neck.
So let's be clear. If I'm running, if I'm Rand Paul and I'm running against him, that video of him walking across the beach with Barack Obama is going to show on every television station of the country.
Question about it.
But listen, let's not make more.
But if you juxtapose that to this issue, does that help erase
this,
it? That's
but this
my
issue
point.
Is not going to win the presidency. This issue is only here for a moment.
Exactly.
It's not about winning the presidency. It's about winning. First of all, you've got to win the nomination.
I think it's wishful thinking.
He's not going to carry California. We're not debating that. The question, does it thrust him back?
It thrusts him back. I don't know that this puts him on top, but it definitely gets him back in. People will start listening to him now.
Right.
Well, just as Rick Perry stood up to the federal government on immigration, when you stand up to the federal government and you basically tell Barack Obama he's wrong, that plays well in the Republican precincts.
Yes, it does. And Rick Perry surged to the forefront with that, which is an ongoing issue. And I'm not convinced we're going to see Ebola as an ongoing issue. So this may be a flash in the pan for Chris Christie. I'm not sure. But I think with the immigration issue, there's a lot more opportunity for this to stay in the public's eye for a lot longer.
Well, strategically, this was a brilliant move on Christie's part because the American people have not at all been satisfied with what the administration has been doing. They've been pretty much in disagreement. And Christie basically took their side and stood up against the administration.
What does it say, Eric, about that Chris Christie and Cuomo were together when this happened?
They have long done things together. This is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I realize you want to resurrect Chris Christie, but Chris Christie is not resurrected by this issue of today that because he stood up to the president on this quarantine issue. Chris Christie's problems are much bigger than that, and he's running. You know what Chris Christie's problem is? Is that there's video of him 2 years ago christening the newest casino in Las Vegas. In Atlantic City, and now Atlantic City is barren. Mm. The state of New Jersey has the worst fiscal situation of any state in America other than Kansas.
You know what? I love this. I think Chris Christie may be our guy because Eric is really scared of him, it sounds like. He may be the guy to beat Hillary.
What about...
If you can get him to win Mississippi and Alabama, we'll talk.
Does this appearance... Again, you said that Governor Cuomo is going to roll to re-election. His name has been mentioned as one of those that conceivably could challenge Hillary Clinton... or be there in case she decides not to do it. Is this an opening for Andrew Cuomo? That's the question. I'm going to give you 3 minutes to think of the answer, and we will be back to hear that. And also, I want to hear, since it appears that Jerry Brown is sailing to re-election, we know that he doesn't like the Clintons. Could he be inspired to make one more run? We know he likes to campaign. Back shortly from Culver City.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont-Pack, thank you very much for joining us. I want to ask Eric Baumann, the chairman of the Los Angeles Democratic Party. Cuomo. Cuomo as a serious challenger, or is there any such thing? You've said earlier in the program you're 100% in for Hillary. Is there any potential serious challenger to her out there?
Well, look, amongst progressives, their dream candidate is Elizabeth Warren. Who has said repeatedly she's not interested in running. And a lot of people thought Cuomo...
That's Mark's a dream to...
I'm sure. And a lot of people have thought Cuomo might do it. But, you know, Cuomo's had some difficulties this past year. And most importantly, this past week, he was with Hillary in New York City and came right up to the edge of endorsing her for president should she choose to run. So I don't think that's going to happen. Of course, the other person people ask about is Governor Brown. And quite frankly, Governor Brown is about setting his legacy, and I think that he's going to use this next 4 years to try to achieve the things that he has established that he hopes will be what he is remembered for, not just the fact that he's closed the budget deficit, but, you know, he wants to build his train and do other things, and that's what he's going to be working hard on, and make sure that we fix our water system here in California, and that's
and
why we got Prop 1.
He has his dog. You were saying before the break or during the break that his dog is on the campaign trail.
So Governor Brown has a wonderful corgi named Sutter, and Sutter is very popular. We take Sutter all across the state. The kids love him. Activists love him. He gets a lot of media attention. And when you're trying to sell people on a water bond and on a rainy day fund, Sutter is a great salesman.
What has this state come to?
Right.
And he will be where will he be? At a local fire hydrant tomorrow?
No. He'll be in campaign headquarters.
Right.
Top Democrat politician,
he's
gonna Sutter.
This week he's going to be in Long Beach, Van Nuys. I mean, he's got a big agenda, big schedule.
And he has a Facebook
He has a Twitter account with thousands and thousands of followers.
Only in California. What a, give me a summary, Mark, of the propositions that are the most excitable to those listening around the country.
Well, we definitely want to beat 45 and 46.
What does that mean to the
public? No in 45. Basically, it has to do with changing the way health care in California is administered. And so it's basically a no on that. Eric might be actually with me on those two.
I'm for sure with you. The LA Democratic Party broke out. The State Democratic Party didn't take a position. The LA Democratic Party came out against Proposition 46. It is a Christmas tree of a bill, and we don't need Christmas trees.
Is there, again, for those listening around the country, by the way, we should mention that next week, which is the last Sunday before the election, we will do our traditional show. Each segment of the show, we'll talk about a different region. We'll do the final check on polls and a variety of things. But I do want to ask our Republican, is there any surprise that is likely to come out of the state of California? And I guess a surprise would be a Republican victory in a state that is overwhelmingly blue. Is there any Democrat candidate that you think a Republican will defeat?
A Republican candidate will win?
Is there going to be a surprise?
I think
give me a Republican surprise.
I think Ashley Swearengin will win.
Tell us who she is.
She's running for controller. She's the mayor of Fresno. She's a very, very impressive candidate. And I think she's going to take that seat. Also, Pete Peterson, possibly for Secretary of State. Again, another statewide office that may go Republican.
Well, we have a lot of listeners in Fresno, one of our long-serving affiliates.
There's only one problem that both Ashley Swearengin and Pete Peterson have. They don't have any money. Nobody's ever going to know they're running.
I know. Unfortunately, they still may win, even though they don't have all the union money backing them.
Oh, notice he emphasized union money. Union money is good, hard-working people's money that is out there to try to make a better future for all working people.
The problem is that the rank-and-file union members usually don't agree with who the union leadership wants
is
them to vote for.
Quick question for 2016. Since Hispanic voters and black voters are an and gay voters are an integral part of the Democratic coalition, in 2016, how would you measure their excitement, each of those three constituencies, for Hillary Clinton?
Well, look, Hillary Clinton has been a star in the gay and lesbian community because if for no other reason than one of her first acts as Secretary of State, that was a personnel matter, was to recognize relationships for same-sex diplomatic staffers.
Even though her husband did not.
Her husband long moved past signing the Defense of Marriage Act, and that's something we can talk about another time. I'd be glad to have that conversation. As far as Latino voters and African-American voters, the Clintons have always had a very close and intimate relationship with the African-American community. Remember, for many, many years, people called Bill Clinton America's first black president. And
until Barack Obama came along and Bill Clinton said some things that were racially insensitive.
And you know what? That's long since over. You look at who the most popular – look at who the most popular
You're forgetting all the dirty laundry.
That
doesn't matter. Statute of limitations is
no.
Out.
Come
right,
on.
Go ahead.
Who's
Hispanic,
you know
for
what?
Me
you,
now.
You can't,
tell me how excited they are about Bill
Clinton. Wait a second. Hold it. You can't just create this the way you want it to be. The fact of the matter is Bill Clinton's approval rating in the African-American community is over 80%. I think that tells you something. And Latino voters – look, Latino voters in droves, over 70% are with Democrats. It's obvious.
You know what?
Aren't they disappointed with Barack Obama?
Yes, right now. Right now they're very
frustrated with him. So they're going to flip. They're going to get all excited.
Are going to realize they have to get beyond identity politics and vote for the candidate who's going to better their – economic conditions
and that's why they're going to vote for the Democrats.
That's why they're going to vote for the Republicans.
we have another 2 years to discuss that one, but our thanks this evening, Mark Viviades, who's the chairman of the Los Angeles Republican Party and the Democratic Party chairman. Also, Eric Baumann has joined us, and Karen Sigelman from Rage Against the Media. We thank you all for being with us for our broadcast this evening. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association this evening with Westwood One in Culver City. Our thanks to Anderson Cowan and Ronales Nuevo for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, when I will be back in Chicago with our big Election Eve special, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from California.